It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Yesterday, Congress voted to advance deep cuts to public media funding around the country with three-vote margins in both chambers.
Among other spending, the rescission package blocks more than $1 billion of funds that had been approved for public media, stripping away 2 years of federal support from NPR, PBS, and more than 1,500 local stations.
What would this loss of funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, mean for local stations here in Wisconsin? We're hearing from two radio stations that serve northern and rural parts of the state. Jesse Dick is the CEO and general manager of WXPR, a public radio station based in Rhinelander that serves northern Wisconsin and Michigan, also airs in Wausau. Jesse, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Carl Habeck is station manager of WOJB, Woodland Community Radio. That's based out of the Lac-Couturier Reservation near Hayward. Carl, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Carl, let's start with WOJB. As we mentioned, you broadcast from the Lac-Couturier Reservation. How much does your station rely on this kind of funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
Well, it actually comprises roughly about 40% of our operating budget. So it's going to be pretty detrimental for us, and it's going to be difficult to make up those funds. We don't have the population density that we can, like other city stations, will probably be able to survive this more than I think that the more rural you get, the tougher this is going to be on a radio station.
And Jesse, tell us about WXPR and what CPB funding means for you.
Sure. For our upcoming budget, we had budgeted 25%. So it's usually about a quarter of WXPR's budget that comes from the federal support.
And then, Jesse, what would a cut like that mean for the services you're providing? What kind of choices are you going to have to make in the coming months?
Sure. As we're in a rural area, and as many people know, the coverage of local news has really disappeared. We don't have a local newspaper in this region anymore. So several years ago, WXPR decided to try to fill that gap, and we added journalists to our staff to fill the need. And in this past year, knowing that this was a possibility, we've had to cut that. And we're down to one reporter at this time. So really the largest impact is right in our local news coverage, which is needed in this region now more than ever before.
And Carl, what does that substantial part of your budget mean? What kind of things could your community lose as a result?
Well, we're gonna lose a substantial amount of NPR programming, NPR Morning Edition, a lot of that rural service grant money is restricted to be used for the purchase of CPB programming. So that's one thing that, possibly could save us some money. Another thing we're going to lose is, we do a lot of community events, concerts, have a presence in different other community events. We're having a big thing at the fairgrounds this August 23rd. We're having six bands and the local library, museum. Everything's having booths, food stands, vendors. It's a family-friendly event, and that's something we don't make a cent on. We'll probably lose money on it, and something like that we won't be able to afford to do in the future. I mean, it's going to cost the community as much as it costs us.
Carl, can you talk more about what you see as the role of WOJB in the community it serves?
Well, WOJB, like I said, we're in a very rural part of the state. I mean, we're, 3 hours to Minneapolis, 2 hours to Duluth, a couple hours to Wausau. I mean, those are the largest communities around us. So, and infrastructure up here is totally different. There's, not only can you not get internet, but a lot of people up here can't afford internet. So this is, they have no other choice, but radio is their sole provider for news, weather, information, school closings. It's really a travesty what this is going to do to our community.
And Jesse, you mentioned a news desert in some ways with the closure of the lack of local papers there. Can you talk a little more about the role of WXPR in the communities you're serving?
Sure. I mean, we have grown to be, we've always been respected for our news coverage, but people turn to WXPR to know what is going on in our community. And the coverage that is done is in-depth and well done. And so it's something that the community depends on all over the Northwoods, the UP, and then central Wisconsin as well. You know, it's telling the stories of the people that live here, the stories that can only be told when you also live here. So those stories just connect people across this region that there isn't a huge population, and we have a lot of trees and a lot of people that live in the woods. And to have that connection through the stories and through the music that happens on WXPR, it is a real connector for the people that live in this region.
And Jesse, Carl mentioned being in a rural area, you don't necessarily have that population base where you think, well, maybe we can make up some of that with local fundraising. Do you see other revenue streams, other possibilities to make up the money lost here?
No, I mean, as Carl mentioned, there's not a lot of foundations. There's not a lot of businesses. We've been supported for over 40 years by our community. We're actually in the first day of our membership drive. So we're turning to them and saying, you know, we need you now more than ever. And we know many will step up. But it's not just a shift of, okay, we'll do more. We'll advertise now. You know, we're still a nonprofit. We cannot legally turn to advertising. So there are some restrictions. But like I said, we've been supported by this community for over 40 years. And we'd like to think that people know how much that the station means to them and the difference that it does make, and that they do join us and step up.
We're talking about cuts to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, included in the rescission package proposed by the Trump administration, approved yesterday by Congress. What this could mean for public and community radio stations in rural Wisconsin. Jesse Dick is with us from WXPR in Rhinelander. Carl Habeck from WOJB near Hayward. Carl, there's one maybe bright spot. I don't know if you have any information on this. There was a side deal saying we're going to take some existing funding to go toward stations that serve tribal communities in a list of states, including Wisconsin. Details are sketchy as far as I'm seeing. Do you know anything about that and whether some of that could come in the direction of WOJB?
Well, I received a letter this morning from Loris Taylor, who is the president and CEO of Native Public Media, and she mentioned something about that in her letter that, they're going to try to get funds out of the Green New Deal that would be reallocated to continue grants for tribal stations without interruption, it says here. And, you know, there's nothing in writing. This is just hearsay. It's, you know, politicians talking. It was something that was stated by the House Speaker. It's, you know, take it with a grain of salt. You believe it? I don't know. It'd be great if it happened. But for right now, it's an unknown. And the thing is that, you know, our fiscal year goes through until September 31st. So, you know, by then we're basically out of funds. I mean, that's how we've always operated in the past is, I mean, we have to watch our budget closely, and you're almost encouraged, you know, to spend all the money that you receive, which will help to kick up your rural service grant. You know, it's something I hope, you know, this and this happens. It's hard to say if it's going to happen. You know, we're preparing for the worst, and then we're almost, you know, looking at it as an opportunity that, you know, a challenge. It's going to be, you know, we're not going anywhere regardless. I mean, we're not going to go dark. We'll be on the air no matter what happens. And I'm going to do everything I can to retain all of my staff and keep us afloat. You know, we're fortunate that we are a Native station in that respect, that, there's possible some consideration that would go us that other stations can't benefit from. I spoke to WORT yesterday. I was on the air with them.
In Madison.
And I said, you know, it's a good thing, but it's not necessarily the right thing. This should not just be, you know, something that's, divided by your race or you know, your specific demographic. I think if you're a public radio station, that everybody should be, you know, allocated. You know, they have their formula for how much each station receives. They can still use a similar formula, and everybody should get the money they need to stay on the air.
Jesse, we just heard Carl say it will be tough, but they're not going to go dark there. They're not going to shut down. What are you looking at for the long-term and maybe even medium-term prospects for WXPR?
Yeah, I think most of us that work in community and public radio, I would say all of us, do it for the mission. And so nobody wants to think about going dark. You know, we've faced challenges before, every year facing fundraising. You know, it's a interesting business model to stay on the air. So nobody wants to think of that. But there are stations all across the country that are going to go dark. And there's been studies done that there is no replacement for that federal funding. And so there's so much unknown right now, but the main thing is the loss of this federal funding means that public media across the country will never look the same. And that's especially in rural areas like ours.
And Carl, before we let you go, what are you watching for next? And now that this deal has been passed by Congress?
Well, I'm just hoping that, you know, there's a lot of questions that remain to be answered. I mean, you know, will the community service grants be reduced, delayed, canceled entirely? And when that's going to happen, will support for public radio, they also have a satellite system, will that be disrupted? Will they provide some funds for stations to adjust? Will there be some kind of adjustment period? I mean, there's only so many things we can do. I mean, in the meantime, I mean, we can, you know, I think it'd be helpful if each station documented how this is affecting them immediately and from day-to-day operations as it carries on.
Thanks to both of our guests, Carl Habeck, station manager of WOJB, and based at the Lakota Ray Reservation near Hayward, and Jesse Dick, CEO and general manager of WXPR, public radio station based in Rhinelander. For Disclosure, WPR receives funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, a bill circulating in the legislature would crack down on sexual extortion and impose harsh penalties for blackmailing and coercing young people.
It will be a warning to these predators, like, not in Wisconsin, not here, not our kids. This is what can happen.
A look at Braden's Law in memory of a teen who died by suicide. That's next on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A bill circulating in the state legislature would create a new category of felony in Wisconsin specific to what lawmakers are calling sextortion.
That's when scammers solicit explicit photos or videos and then threaten to release that material unless the victim sends money or engages in sexual favors. Teenage boys have been particularly vulnerable.
The bill is known as Braden's Law in memory of Braden Bone, a Wisconsin teen who took his own life after falling victim to online sextortion.
As a warning, the following conversation with Braden's mother includes a discussion about suicide.
Brittany Bird of Cronin-Wetter joins us now to talk about her son's story and her advocacy work against the sexual extortion of children. Brittany, thank you for being here and so sorry for your loss.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on this ever-growing issue, and I appreciate the support from all sides in being able to get this information out to other families.
First, let's learn about Braden. How do his friends and family know and remember him?
Sure. Gosh, Braden was so kind. He was an extremely talented athlete, a gifted academic. He was a great friend. He has a little sister who turned 9 on March 8th. He played baseball. He was great at skiing. He was very athletic, did not get it from me. He had so many people who absolutely just loved him. And I think that is one of the big reasons why this just rocked our small community, because he was so loved and just adored and so kind and had such a big heart. And he was smart. He was a smart kid.
Why are teenage boys particularly vulnerable to sextortion?
So what I've kind of learned along the way during this is teenage boys are targeted because they don't have that critical thinking mindset. They just don't have the decision-making skills to know that this is not their forever. This is not the end. And a lot of times these people will target kids who are on sports teams, who have a lot of friends, essentially the kids who feel like they have everything to lose, and they make them feel like they've lost it all.
I want to stop right there to look at sports and any link with teens who are involved with sports teams being targeted by these criminals in particular. What can you tell us? Why is that?
So what they normally do is, so they'll build a fake profile, right? And the way they do that is connecting with friends of who this victim is. So if someone's on, you know, an athlete, does well in school, is well-liked, they're probably going to have more friends on social media. So these people will add their friends, make it look like it's someone who they maybe know, and then extort and push them to, you know, the point where Brayden was. And I think they do it because that's the way that they can gain their trust. You know, I'm friends with so-and-so on your sports team. We actually had in our case someone from Brayden's baseball team who was contacted a month and a half after he was.
Why does this type of blackmail have such dangerous outcomes, such fatal consequences? What is it?
I mean, think of being a teenager in today's world, right? Everything goes online. They can't even, it's not like when we were kids and you could go out and mess around or play or whatever. And if something weird happened, people forgot about it in a week, right? It's constant. So I think that is a huge driving force when it comes to this, because they know my stuff is out there. It's never going away. How am I going to continue to live my life with that ridicule? And even if that wasn't the case, even if it could be taken down, a 15-year-old doesn't see that far into the future. Brayden did send them money, and they continued even after he sent them $300. So I think that's a big thing, too, that, you know, people need to know is these people are relentless. They're relentless.
Did you get any indication that this was going on in Brayden's life?
Absolutely not. The night that March 4th, he was actually in my salon with me, with his friend. I was bleaching his friend's hair. We were there for a couple hours, laughing, joking around. Everything was fine. Around 11 o'clock, my husband told him good night. And in the morning when I went to tell him that it was a snow day and he could go to the ski hill, he was gone. It took 4 hours from the time that he was contacted until he had taken his life. 4 hours. We were sleeping. We had no idea.
I'm so sorry. Since then, you have really worked on advocacy for online safety and holding social media companies accountable for abuse that occurs on their websites. What have you learned about the role of social media in cases like Brayden's?
Sure. So the deeper I kind of get into these things, the more, you know, you find out. Actually, it's called Section 230, where it protects social media companies for being held liable for, like, third-party things. But what that kind of envelops, too, is if someone is contacted by a predator on their platform, they're not held liable for that either. However, they are aware of the amount of fake profiles and continue to keep the profiles because it looks like they have more users. And if they have more users, they get more money from advertising and companies and things of that nature. They've done it. They've wiped hundreds of fake profiles in a day after Jordan DeMay's case. That was out of Michigan. And I think a couple weeks or a week after he had died, Facebook made a big post about how they deleted, you know, hundreds of duplicate and fake profiles. So they have the ability, they know which ones, and they're either just choosing not to do it because of users or because of the manpower it may take. I'm not sure, and I don't know that we'll ever get answers on that, but we are definitely going to continue down that road.
The State Assembly has passed this bipartisan bill called Braden's Law after your son. It's now being considered in the Senate. It would create this new category of felony that's specific to sextortion. It also sets additional penalties as well. What do you think about this legislation?
I mean, I'm obviously very glad that something is going to be something good, I guess, will be coming of this. I wish that it wasn't our story that had to make this happen. But if it can save even, you know, one more kid from going through this, one more family, in our case, it won't affect our case specifically because it'll be a federal case, but our hope is that it will be a warning to these predators. Like, not in Wisconsin, not here, not our kids. This is what can happen. So For the most part, I think that we're just really hoping that it prevents it from happening in the future at this point. I mean, that's all we can do.
Brittany, what would you tell young people right now who have entered a conversation with someone they don't know online? What would you say?
If something feels off, it is. If something feels weird, if you're questioning it, then it is. And even if it doesn't end up being something, you know, that's threatening, you gotta say something. And in a lot of these speaking events I've done, I've made it a point to let parents know, first of all, your kids are gonna do stupid stuff. They're kids. Their brains are not prepared for what the world has put in their hands. They have a cell phone that's letting the entire world into their hands. And from there, I have also told the kids who have attended, your parents, your family, people who love you will do absolutely anything to protect you. That is our job. That is why we're here. And you're worth more than the $300 that someone from overseas wants from you. This is not your forever. Things are scary right now because their world is so small that everything seems so big. I just remind them that this is not their forever. It's so hard for them to see that.
Brittany, thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's the only way there's going to be a change is the more people who talk about it. It's nothing to be ashamed of. I've never been ashamed of my son for what he did. He's a kid. He's being a kid. It's not shameful. We have to keep talking about it.
That was Brittany Bird, mother of Braden Bone. Braden died by suicide on March 5th after falling victim to sextortion. He was 15. Brittany is advocating for efforts to stop sextortion and raise awareness about these online crimes. A bill in memory of Braden called Braden's Law is moving through the Wisconsin legislature. It is now before the state Senate's Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. Republican State Senator Jesse James of Thorpe is vice chair of that committee. State Senator James, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You testified earlier this year in favor of this bill when it was up for consideration in the Assembly, and we learned from Braden's mother about his life and his tragic death. From what I understand, the bill would create new penalties for the crime of sexual extortion, but in Wisconsin, sextortion isn't a specific crime. Is that an issue? Could you be able to crack down on this through this bill?
Oh, absolutely. I think with it being recognized as, you know, extortion or sexual extortion, and creating the new penalties, defining this crime, and having the penalties is, I think, extremely a valuable start. It seems like we're playing catch up all the time, and you know, creating new legislation, new language, putting new definitions into statute is always going to be part of this job. And I think that getting this into statute, having our media, radio, social media, everybody covering this and getting the word out is going to help boost this and help our kiddos.
With that said, what consequences then exist for social media companies because of actions taken on their platforms, right? And the false accounts that these predators use to go after teens?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You're seeing across our nation more parameters, more laws, and regulations put on our social media platforms with verifying age. Of course, everything can be bypassed, I guess, is for lack of a better term. And I guess sites can be fooled, or I don't know, however you want to say that, but you know, I think that's part of what we need to continuously look at. And with the popularity of AI, which is also a component of this sextortion type crime, we need to be looking at anything and everything and holding these companies responsible, especially when they're the platforms that are specifically targeting our children.
Here at the state level, under this legislation, what might the punishment be for someone found guilty of sextortion in Wisconsin?
Well, yeah, there's several penalties here. It creates the new crime, and then it's going to be generally a Class I felony for anybody that threatens to injure the property or reputation of another, to coerce that person to engage in sexual conduct or produce an intimate representation, threaten to commit violence against another, to coerce that person to engage in sexual conduct or produce an intimate representation, threaten to distribute an intimate representation of another person with intent to coerce that person to engage in sexual conduct, producing an intimate representation, or to provide payment of money, property, services, or anything of value, to refrain from doing any act against that person's will. Class H felonies come into play when the victim, as a result of violation, engages in the sexual conduct, produces an intimate representation, and provides a payment of money, property, or services, or anything of value, or suffers great bodily harm if the victim is under age 18. So this is actually protecting adults as well. And the defendant's not 4 years older than the victim. So that would be a Class G felony. If there's so many elements, if they're a violent sex offender, they increases the penalties. If there's under extortion, current law is punishable by Class I felony for felony murder. Mm-hmm. And is in prison for up to 15 years longer than the maximum term. In this one, we made it a Class B felony if somebody would die by suicide because of the act of sextortion. So I think cleaning up the language and obviously working with the Department of Justice and our Attorney General, Josh Call, having them being influential in how this moves forward is extremely valuable. This is truly a bipartisan bill. We're taking the actions to to help protect those victims who may be adults or even our children. You'd be shocked at how many people don't know what this is and what the definition of sextortion is. So I think we have a duty and obligation as legislators to inform our general public, the areas that we represent, and share the good legislation that we're passing at on a bipartisan level in our state. And I'm feeling confident that the governor will definitely sign this.
Yes, on that note, State Senator James, what do you see as the path forward for this bill in the state Senate and, you know, in your chamber?
Yeah, I have put in a request to Chairman Van Longaard for a hearing. And I would anticipate hopefully a hearing come September, October. Then we'll get it to the floor in the Senate. I don't doubt that we will not, that there would be any issues with the votes. I think this will probably pass unanimously, and then we'll get it to the governor's desk for signing.
State Senator James, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Republican State Senator Jesse James of Thorpe, who is vice chair of the State Senate's Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety. We talked about Braden's Law, which could create a new classification of felony for sextortion, for which predators could face murder charges if their actions were a big factor in the victim's suicide. And earlier, we spoke with Brittany Bird, mother of Braden Bone. If you or someone you know needs help, the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available by calling or texting 988. And the State Department of Justice offers online resources for parents about sextortion and online exploitation. Go to wisdoj.gov.
Coming up, a champion UW pole vaulter picks up a new challenge as a contestant on American Ninja Warrior.
You can only get ready so much because you don't know what to expect out there.
That's coming up next here on WPR News. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Bridget Bowden with a story about making bird watching accessible for everyone.
It's part of WPR's Wisconsin Road Trip series, which features pit stops across the state to explore some of the people, places, and things that make Wisconsin summers special.
Orioles, pelicans, and snowy owls are a few of the hundreds of species that birdwatchers are on the lookout for in Wisconsin this year. Many will travel the state and roam their neighborhoods, crossing birds off their life lists. People like Dexter Patterson.
There's some grackles along here.
He's a lifelong bird lover who found his calling spotting ospreys and yellow-headed blackbirds. But Patterson says he sometimes struggled to find his place in the birding community.
I was like always the only person of color. And like, I was like, I love birds so much, but that also wasn't, you never really feel welcome in, when you don't see people like you.
That's why he co-founded the BIPOC Birding Club of Wisconsin in 2021. Patterson, who's Black, says he wanted to create a space for Black, Indigenous, and people of color to explore the outdoors through birding. The club is open to people of any race who share the values of diversity and access in outdoor recreation.
So, I call it bird joy, and I feel like that's my mission. It's to spread as much of that bird joy to as many people as possible in my community.
Today, the club is gathered in Madison.
We're in what they call the Central Island of Tinney Park, which is really cool.
It's an urban park in the middle of the city, but it's rich with nature from Lake Mendota, ponds, and marshy areas in between. The event is all about stationary birding. That means the group is not planning to hike through the woods to find birds. They're going to set up lawn chairs and wait for the birds to come to them. Patterson says it's a good introduction to birding.
And I think that's really important for new birders, is to get around other folks and, you know, be able to ask questions and, you know, and get more comfortable, because it can be a little intimidating, right? Because it's just like, there's so many birds. Oriole, sorry.
Patterson will be the first one to tell you that he's easily distracted by birds. He can't help it. There are so many opportunities to spot them.
Cardinal. Male cardinal right in front of us.
Even in this urban park in the middle of Madison.
Oriole right above us. Right there.
Jasmine Banks joined the club after hearing Patterson on a podcast.
So I had never been birding before. It wasn't anything that I had seen somebody that looked like me do. And so it just wasn't anything that crossed my mind. And then because of that, like, a bird was just a bird. And then it wasn't until I learned about the BIPOC Birding Club and then went to their first event and felt extremely welcomed that now it's like, okay, a bird is not just a bird.
Banks is part of a wave of new birders. Data from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service shows birding is a growing hobby across the country. A 2024 report showed nearly 4 in 10 Americans had either taken a trip 1 mile from home to observe birds or had closely observed or tried to identify birds around the home. That's up 19 percentage points from the same report in 2019. Today, Banks is sitting with her sister and young niece. They say it's not just the birds or the time spent outdoors, but the sense of community that keeps them coming back.
So we just saw a blue heron.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Yeah.
And what else did you see?
Oh, you gotta say it.
I saw a common grackle.
Extra ackle.
So the funny thing was, I told my sister, she said, is that a robin? I said, oh no, that's a common grackle.
From the bluffs over the Mississippi River to the shores of the Great Lakes and in between, there are a lot of places in Wisconsin where you can go to see birds. And many are worth a dedicated trip. But you can also experience bird joy from your nearest park, Patterson says.
We had some great birds. Multiple orioles, yellow warblers. I had a red start as well. Warbling vireo, cedar waxwings.
In just 2 hours on this day, from this one spot, they saw 26 species.
This is crazy. We're literally in like this tiny little area seeing all these great birds.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Bridget Bowden.
Join us every Friday this summer for more Wisconsin road trips. To see all the stops and plan your own road trip, find the series page. It's online at wpr.org/roadtrip. This is Wisconsin Today.
We love seeing Wisconsinites chase their dreams on the national stage.
Taylor Allman is another college track star who's made it to the national final.
Three-time Big Ten pole vault champ.
The Wisconsin native vaulted past lunatic ledges and raced across log runner.
Former UW-Madison pole vaulter, lifelong Wisconsinite Taylor Allman grew up in Heartland. She's competing in her fifth season of NBC's American Ninja Warrior, where contestants make their way across a really difficult and unpredictable obstacle course.
Last month, we learned that she made it to the semifinals.
She joined us now for a look at her athletic career and what it takes to make it across those ninja courses. Taylor, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, congrats on advancing to the semifinals this time around. How good does that feel?
It feels amazing. I work really hard for it. I've been, like you said, an athlete my whole life, and it's really cool to keep going and keep putting myself out there and see how well I can do each time.
You've done gymnastics. You've done pole vaulting, of course, at UW. How much did the skills and the experiences you gained there help you prepare for something like American Ninja Warrior?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I feel like I've been training my whole life, but I didn't know it. I started gymnastics when I was 4 years old, and one thing kind of led to the next, and I got to high school, and all those skills translated really well to pole vaulting. Ended up being really good at that. And then when I tried Ninja Warrior for the first time, I feel like all the strength and body awareness and coordination and flexibility all kind of came together, and training specifically for it, going to a ninja gym helps a ton. So just getting on those obstacles, swinging around, doing pull-ups and kind of balance type obstacles too.
What is it about the Ninja Warrior show that appeals to you? Because this is not your first go around. You first did it with a college team back in 2016. You've been back a bunch of times since. What is it that makes you appreciate this challenge?
I just love competing in general, but the ninja community is just so nice. It's really cool to meet people from all over and kind of travel around and train with them. It's cool to see everyone's stories because everyone comes from a different background. Unlike gymnastics and pole vaulting, I feel like they're kind of similar backgrounds, but ninjas can be from whole different backgrounds of like climbers or maybe not even athletes at all. There's been football players, just really random things. So it's really cool to see.
What is in your mind at that moment as a lifelong athlete? What are you thinking to brace yourself, prepare yourself to run that course?
Yeah, I mean, you can only get ready so much because you don't know what to expect out there. You can train every single day at your local ninja gyms and you don't know what obstacles they're going to throw at you when you get out there. And when you get out there, you don't get to try the obstacles beforehand. So you get to watch a tester go through. And then if you're first in the order, you go first. If you're last, you get to watch competitors do it first. But yeah, you get up there and you're just hoping for the best.
Now, I got to say, watching, it looks pretty hard to me. And my guess is it's harder than it looks, even as hard as it looks to begin with. Can you give us a sense of just, you know, even for an athlete, how tough these courses are?
They are really tough. I mean, mentally and physically, because not knowing what to expect, you don't know how it's going to feel either until you're actually doing it. So it's definitely challenging. Some of the obstacles they bring back from prior years, so you can get lucky in that way if you've done it before, but most of them are pretty new. So without training it and without touching the obstacle, it's really hard to know how it's going to feel.
We're talking about a Wisconsin participant in the American Ninja Warrior show. You can see that on NBC and Peacock. It is a UW All-American pole vaulter, Taylor Ammon, with us talking about the challenge of being on the show. We got a question from some fans. Taylor, my co-host, kids are big fans of American Ninja Warrior. They had a very specific question. When you fall into the water. They want to know, how cold is the water?
It's very cold, but I feel like you're so nervous and you have so much adrenaline that you don't really notice it, if that makes sense. I do always think about the water before I fall in, before I start the course, worrying that it's like super cold. But I feel like in the moment, you just kind of, you hit the water and you don't feel too much.
Now, you are from Wisconsin. You're in, I think, Milwaukee now. You went to UW-Madison. Do you have a feeling like, hey, I'm representing Wisconsin on this national stage?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I run into people often and they're like, oh my gosh, you're the Wisconsin Ninja. So it's really cool to represent Wisconsin.
I want to talk a little bit about your career in pole vaulting. When you mentioned you'd had the gymnastics background, pole vaulting is not, I think, the top of everybody's list of sports they're going to try, of events they're going to try. What was it about that event that grabbed you?
Yeah, it was very random. My sister tried pole vaulting and a few of the girls that went to my club gym were also trying pole vault. They said they wanted to be on the track team, but not run. And that's kind of the same boat I was in. It would be nice to try other sports since I've really only done gymnastics my whole life. So I thought track team could be kind of cool, but again, I never have been a runner. So I tried it one day and it just clicked. Like, I feel like it was kind of like riding a bike. Like, I've done it before.
Wow.
And then I kind of started beating all the seniors on the team, and I was just a freshman, and I just kept getting better and better at it. And it was super fun.
I can't imagine the first vault has got to be kind of a leap of faith, right? I mean, you're going up in the air for the first time. What was that like the first time you went up? And I don't know if you have a bar on the first one or if you're just going onto the mat.
Yeah, it's super gradual. Like, the first time you do it, you don't have a bar or a bungee up, and you kind of just take the pole and run through onto the pit and just kind of land and just kind of go through the motions of it. And then you put the lowest bungee up, 3 feet, maybe 4 feet. And you start with that, and you just kind of keep making your way up, and it just starts to feel more natural the more you do it.
And probably everybody's had the dream where they're flying for a little bit. For a few seconds in the vault, you're kind of flying. What is that like? What does that feel like?
It's a wild feeling, but it is really quick. It's really funny. At one point in my college career, I'm like, are my eyes open when I'm doing this? Like, I didn't even know if I have my eyes open or closed. Like, it just happens so fast. But it does feel really good. Like, once you see that you cleared the bar and then you're kind of just free falling onto the pit, like, it's a really cool feeling.
Now, a lot of people, when they get out of a college athletic career, the question is, you know, what can I do to keep my hand in sports and athletics? Is American Ninja Warrior enough to scratch that athletic itch for you?
It totally does. I was also kind of worried about that, what I was going to do next. I had no idea, because I knew I wasn't going to keep pole vaulting, and it's not something you can just pick up after a few months and just get back into it. Just super fun to have something to keep training for.
Now, for maybe younger people listening who might want to broaden their athletic horizons, but might not want to go into something like pole vaulting or American, or maybe it hasn't crossed the radar, can you give some words of encouragement to try something new in the athletic world?
Yeah, I think trying something new is a really great idea. I feel like I did that along the way with everything, and you never know what you're going to be good at unless you try something new. And I know a lot of young kids are trying ninja instead of gymnastics nowadays, just because it's less expensive, less time commitment, and it's less scary, I would say. But I feel like, yeah, it'd be fun for everyone to try. You're kind of just, it's kind of like a little playground, like you're swinging around on monkey bars and fun things that kids like to do.
All right. And do you want to give a shout out to Wisconsin and invite them to watch you on American Ninja Warrior?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what day I'm going to be on, but keep an eye on my Instagram and my Facebook page. I'll post when I'll be on next. But yeah, it'd be cool to have all my Wisconsin fans watching.
Taylor, thanks. And you've done Wisconsin proud.
Thank you so much.
That's Taylor Ammon, Wisconsinite, a UW-Madison pole vaulting champion and semifinalist in the current season of American Ninja Warrior. To see if she made this year's finals, you can catch new episodes Mondays on NBC or stream starting on Tuesdays on Peacock. Yesterday, I got out of the studio and went to a local conservation park to talk to the Wisconsin author of a new book about finding great hikes and walks in your local area.
That interview will air later this month. We invited you to share your local hikes, and we got an email from Gordon in Fitchburg.
Gordon writes, during COVID, I realized that the Ice Age Trail was a perfect place to get out and enjoy the great outdoors just outside my back door. From my home in Fitchburg, I can walk 3 miles in one direction and hop on the Ice Age Trail 3 miles in the opposite direction, be in the UW Arboretum. It's wonderful.
Oh, that's awesome. And you can still share your favorite local walks and hikes. Give us a tour. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. Or you can call or text to get in touch at 888-642-0232. Once again, that's 888-642-0232.
And if you want to get real fancy, record a short voice memo on your phone while you're out for that hike and send it our way.
Wisconsin Today producers include Rochelle Wilson and Avery Lee Rogers. Our technical directors are Tyler Ditter and Sarah Hopeful.
Tim Peterson is managing producer. Dean Knetter is our executive producer. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.